From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, immigration enforcement facing more scrutiny, questions about tactics, changes in leadership. All eyes have been on Minnesota after two fatal shootings there by federal agents. How is it all being viewed in Chicago, which has also been targeted? And now we know how much President Trump's deployment of National Guard troops to help with the effort has cost taxpayers. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus, and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, good to have her back on the show, Heather Sharon, Senior Reporter for WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Heather, thanks for being with us.
I'm glad to be back.
So we've watched since the fall, Heather, Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago. There were incidents, clashes between federal agents and protesters, including some that got violent. But it's really come to a head in Minnesota. And as someone who's been on the ground in Chicago watching this, are you surprised at what has happened in Chicago? It seems to have taken even a more violent turn there.
Well, the number of agents sent by the Trump administration to Minneapolis is an order of magnitude greater than the number of agents that were ever on the ground here in Chicago. And of course, Minneapolis, you know, even when you include the twin city of St. Paul, is just a much smaller city from Chicago. So more agents in a concentrated area, I think, gives you a sense of why it has become such a flashpoint in Minnesota. But the tactics that we saw, in Chicago between September and mid-November, were very similar to what we saw in Minneapolis. It's a difference of degree, not sort of new tactics. And I think for a lot of people in Chicago, watching what's happened in Minneapolis has been very, I want to say, traumatizing, because we had federal agents shoot somebody who they believed was attempting to impede their efforts. We had multiple cases of tear gas deployed all across the city. And we had this notion put forward by the federal government without offering any proof that people who were seeking to exercise their First Amendment rights were actually organized agitators intent upon doing harm to federal agents. And, you know, I spent a lot of time in court listening to the evidence to support those claims, and there were none, as U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis ultimately ruled.
Charlie, it's been interesting that while we've seen this effort elsewhere, including in Chicago, I don't know that the entire country has been as affixed to what's going on as what has happened, of course, in Minnesota. Now, two people have been shot and killed there, and that certainly raises the profile of this story, of course. But, you know, what we're seeing right now, you know, what do you think as far as, are we going to see some real changes with this immigration enforcement campaign? Do you expect that?
Well, I think one of the changes that we're seeing is the fact that Gregory Bovino, who was sort of the super macho guy who was running the show up in Chicago, he's, for want of a better way to look at it, I think he's being put out to pasture. And Tom Homan has come in to take over the operation, and he's told the folks in Minnesota that, well, we're going to ease back if you'll cooperate with us. And the bottom line is, you have to do what we tell you and do all these things. And I don't think it's going to play in Minnesota. Now, I have no clue what's happening, you know, everywhere around the country. But I do know in Chicago, the opposition to this whole immigration and deportation operation has been ongoing. As a matter of fact, just the other day, there was, I think, seven people were arrested at a Target store, because they were complaining that the store, the Target, has not come out more strongly against the mass deportation campaign. And then there was a rally just the other day outside of the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Chicago, where nurses and others had a candlelight vigil to mourn the death of one of the individuals killed, murdered up in Minneapolis, an intensive care unit nurse named Alex Preddy. And in for all the cold and the harsh conditions, there were like a couple hundred people showed up outside the medical center in Chicago to mourn his death and to demand that the U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement, that ICE, be disbanded. And I'm pretty sure that this vigil was organized by the National Nurses United. And I think they reported that they were having similar rallies across the country at a couple dozen places. So I think the opposition is ongoing. And I think indications are that the Trump administration is kind of having second thoughts. And the fact that I believe today is sort of a national day of, and this is on Friday, there are a lot of stores, a lot of restaurants, a lot of schools that are closing down to show their support for the immigrants. And the thing that amazes me is that the PR people for Homeland Security continue to lie through their teeth, and I'm not sure that it serves your cause. Like the gentleman who was murdered in Minneapolis, they contend that he came at the agents with a gun, and then he was going to massacre people. And that's not true. The video evidence of bystanders who recorded it on their phones showed that no, he was trying to help a woman who that ICE agents had knocked to the ground, or I guess they were Border Patrol agents had knocked to the ground. He was trying to help her up, knocked him down, and shot him like 10 times in the back as he was on his knees. Now, what kind of a country is that when you have that going on? And when the agency heads, instead of saying, yeah, these guys were out of line, defended them against all the evidence. And this is something I've discussed before, particularly with my son. I'm not sure what you gain by having flat out lies. I mean, I've dealt with politicians, you know, for more than 50 years, and a lot of them would tell me something that wasn't really true, but there was always enough of a semblance of maybe there could be an item of truth to it. And anyone who told me a bald-faced lie, as the Homeland Security people are doing routinely, I would just discount them in the future. So I'm thinking to myself, if you're just an average citizen, and you hear what the comments were made about how Alex Preddy was a bad guy, and then you see how he's executed at the hands of these federal agents, and he's not doing what the mouthpiece for the Homeland Security is saying he's doing, you have to think to yourself, well, I can't really believe what these people are saying. Mm-hmm. Or do I believe what I can see with my own eyes?
Yeah, they seem to be failing PR 101 at this point. Now, Tom Homan is a longtime ICE employee there and has, you know, certainly been around. He worked under Obama as well. Maybe he's the type of guy that can stabilize things a bit, because what we're seeing in the polling, according to what I've been seeing, at least, Heather, is that Trump still gets good marks for border enforcement. In fact, that's one of the few things that he's getting pretty high marks on. But the numbers really drop when it comes to how they're enforcing immigration on the streets and in these cities. So the administration is running a risk of taking the one area where they have support and turning it into a big negative. And I would guess congressional Republicans and others are seeing that, too. So there is pressure on the administration right now, isn't there?
There sure is. But I think that it's important to remember who Tom Homan is. He was the architect during the first Trump administration of the family separation effort, which separated parents from their children at the southern border, that erupted into sort of the first big immigration-related controversy during the first Trump administration. So he is also somebody who was on the ground in Chicago in January, accompanied by TV's Dr. Phil McGraw, detaining, apprehending people that they said were the worst of the worst undocumented immigrants. They never really publicly demonstrated any evidence of that and shortly left Chicago after expressing frustration that Chicagoans seemed to be very well organized and very prepared to assert their legal rights and do what's possible to protect their undocumented neighbors. Now, that's something that we heard from Border Patrol Chief Greg Vivino shortly before the president ordered him out of Minneapolis after the deaths of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. So I am not really convinced that there has been any significant change in Minneapolis, despite the outcry after Alex Preddy's death. And we will just have to see, because we've seen time and again, sort of the Trump administration push the envelope, get sort of trigger outrage, at least appear to pull back, and then continuing pushing forward. And I think that there are a lot of people who are watching very closely sort of what happens in the next couple of days in Minneapolis, as well as in other states. You know, there's been talk that enforcement action has been canceled in Maine at the request of Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins. There are also unconfirmed reports that federal agents are preparing to attempt to detain Haitian immigrants living with legal status in Ohio. So there's a lot that we don't know. And I agree with Charlie. It's very difficult as a reporter to report what government officials say when there is such a clear record of them simply not telling the truth.
Yeah, Charlie, that's it's not just Republicans that are putting some pressure on the and feeling the pressure, I should say, from constituents. I think many of them are saying maybe this is going too far. But Democrats are feeling it, too. I've seen some polling that says Democratic voters are not happy with their party's response to this, that they think they need to push harder to rein in the Trump administration. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, and I think you're seeing an indication with what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. There are a handful of budget bills that need to be approved to fund the federal government through September. And there was a package of bills, and included in there was funding for the Homeland Security Department. And the Democrats in the Senate stood up and said, no, we will not vote for Homeland Security. And they threatened to scuttle the whole thing. And I found it interesting because if you recall, when there's the earlier shutdown, there were a number of senior Democrats, including our own Senator Dick Durbin, who voted to end the shutdown. This time around, the Senate Democrats are united. And as we record this show, it appears that there will be a vote on all the rest of the funding for the rest of state government. Homeland Security will get like 2 weeks worth of funding. And in that time, there is going to be negotiations to impose some guardrails on what Homeland Security does in terms of requiring more than these masked armed men banging in your door and saying, we think you're a criminal, we're going to deport you. And so I think that shows that the senior Democratic leadership in Congress is taking this to heart, that they are going to have to stand up to what's going on because of the arguments that are being made or the concerns being raised by their constituents. One of the things I found interesting, and Heather, you wrote about this the other day, that there was a state commission formed to kind of document the abuses that have gone on with this Operation Midway Blitz in Chicago and in the suburbs. And the governor, I guess it was late Thursday, sent a note saying that the accountability commission should review and document information related to the statements, policy decisions, and roles of some of the administration, Trump administration individuals that have led to the escalation of aggressive enforcement tactics. The governor's note suggested that the commission should focus on Stephen Miller, Tom Homan, the border leader, Kristi Noem, who's the Secretary of Homeland Security, Greg Bovino, who I suspect within a month or so is going to be retired, and some of the other people involved in Homeland Security, Customs and Border Patrol, Immigration, Customs Enforcement, And what Pritzker said, and I thought this was interesting, and this is a quote, he said, "For too long, Gregory Bovino and his rogue federal agents have terrorized communities in Illinois and across the country, violated our people's constitutional rights, and unleashed violence at every turn. Greg Bovino, Kristi Noem, Donald Trump's other lackeys should find lawyers, because they must still be held responsible for the killings and the damages they've done to our country." So I thought that was interesting, that apparently our commission here in Illinois is going to document these violations by the federal agents to prepare a historical record, which may lead to criminal charges being filed against some of these agents.
So, Heather, I guess it all comes down to a question I've been having is, as I watch what's happening in Minnesota, the pushback that we're seeing on immigration enforcement, when the Operation Midway Blitz slowed down here at the end of last year, there was talk the agents are going to be coming back in bigger numbers than before, stronger on the street in Chicago, and that likely happened in the spring. At this point, we really can't say, I guess, what to look ahead to. We're really not sure. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, I think part of the problem with federal government officials sort of sharing information that's either not true or just, you know, shaded in a confusing way makes it impossible for anybody to have any certainty about what's going to happen. And I think that that's by design. The president has said that this is part of the largest mass deportation effort in United States history. And part of that involves, you know, sort of apprehending people when they least expect it. So this sort of uncertainty is a feature, not a bug, and it is designed to sort of keep immigrant rights advocates off balance and to honestly frighten people into what the government has said is self-deporting. And I think that anybody who tells you that they know what's going to happen once the weather breaks here in Chicago doesn't know what they're talking about.
Well, let me ask you something else that we have talked about in the past has been the president's decision to deploy National Guard troops to help with all this immigration enforcement. And he did that here in Illinois, for example. Well, the Congressional Budget Office now is out with a report to show what the cost of that has been. You wrote about it. So, Heather, fill us in on what that showed.
Well, in all, the president's decision to send federalized National Guard troops to six American cities has cost taxpayers $496 million through the end of December. Of that, $21 million was used to send 375 Illinois and Texas National Guard troops to Chicago, even though those troops were never deployed. If you remember, federal judge April Perry blocked them from being deployed, and that was ultimately upheld by the United States Supreme Court, that ruled that the Trump administration had not shown that there was a need to deploy active military in American cities. But that is just a massive amount of money that has really had, that taxpayers really have nothing to show for it here in Chicago. Now, National Guard troops remain on the ground in Washington, D.C., and that is the largest chunk of this expense. And there's no end in sight for that deployment in the nation's capital, which, of course, is a different legal situation than Chicago and Los Angeles and Portland, because it is not a state, it is a federally controlled district.
Charlie, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, like she said, that's a lot of money.
Oh, it is. And one of the things that was in the report that I found interesting, the Congressional Budget Office attempted to sort of predict how much future deployments could cost. And and according to the report, continuing the ongoing deployments at their size as of the end of 2025 would cost $93 million a month. So we have this ongoing drain of our taxpayer dollars. And his justification is that, well, we're going to combat crime and support local law enforcement. But local officials say, well, crime's going down. It has been going down. So that was the thing that struck me. If we continue this, it's going to be just an ongoing expenditure of hundreds of millions of dollars for no real purpose.
Well, let me move on, Charlie. I'll go to you on this. State of Illinois' legal team has stayed busy in the first year of Donald Trump's second term. As it's been determined by Capital News Illinois that the Attorney General's office filing more than 50 lawsuits, almost one per week, since Trump came back into office. And it's not uncommon to see a state sue the federal government, but that number is pretty high.
Yeah, it is. It's, as you say, I think it's Illinois has filed or joined 51 lawsuits. And so that is like one a week between January of 2025 and this January. And they've challenged a whole wide range of executive orders, funding freezes, regulatory changes. We, the state of Illinois, has been the lead plaintiff in several high-profile lawsuits, challenging the deployment of National Guard troops in Chicago, challenging some of the aggressive federal immigration enforcement that occurred during the Operation Midway Blitz. And so in most instances, these cases remain ongoing, but there have been successes in that the courts have ruled in favor of Illinois and other attorneys general who filed these suits, and the administration has backed down a couple times. And one of the things that was interesting was our attorney general Kwame Raoul talked about this, and he pointed out that some of these lawsuits focused on the Trump administration's efforts to tie federal funding to making changes in policy that the Trump administration wants. And they've threatened to withhold funding for Medicare, Medicaid, food assistance, education, universities, and so on, trying to force states to change their policies on immigration, diversity, equity, and inclusion and gender identity, among other things. Kwame Raoul said that those suits have protected more than $6.6 billion in federal funding for the state.
A couple of minutes left here. And Heather, let me ask you about a couple of stories you've written about. One of them, the long-awaited casino for Chicago. It's now right now a temporary casino that Bally's operates for the city. But the numbers they're producing for tax revenue, a little bit underwhelming, to say the least. So fill us in on that.
Well, in 2025, the temporary casino in River North brought in less than $16 million. And that's less than what it brought in 2024, which means that it's not really attracting more high-paying gamblers, which the city was really hoping would help pay for its police and fire pensions. Now, city officials are hopeful that this is going to turn around once the permanent casino is open and it has a nearby hotel and event venue and really becomes a destination from people nationwide. But there are lots of questions about the future of gambling in Chicago. The budget approved over the mayor's objections by the city council includes the permitting of video gaming, video poker, video slots at every Chicago bar or restaurant that has a liquor license. It's not clear sort of when any of those terminals would be permitted by the state to open up. And if they do, Bally's is likely to say, we no longer owe you $4 million as part of the license agreement that was inked back in 2022. So it is a very fraught sort of time for what many city officials hoped was going to be the golden goose that would help the city sort of get out from under the massive pension debt that it owns. But so far, they're rolling snake eyes.
Yeah, we'll watch that, continue to watch that. Also, former mayor Rahm Emanuel making headlines once again. So tell us what's happening there.
There was a botched raid back in 2018 that a family of six says violated their civil rights and left them traumatized. That lawsuit is finally set to go to a federal jury on Monday of next week. And the judge in the case will allow the plaintiff's attorney to call former Mayor Rahm Emanuel to talk about his 2015 statement that a code of silence within CPD allowed officers to act with impunity and made it nearly impossible to hold officers accountable for misconduct. Now, they're hoping that the former mayor's testimony will help convince the jury that the city knew there were problems with the way that the police department was obtaining search warrants, problems with the way they were serving search warrants, and that the city should have stepped in earlier to prevent the trauma to this family. Now, it's not clear whether Rahm Emanuel will actually testify as scheduled on Tuesday. The city vociferously tried to prevent that from happening. It would be unprecedented for a former mayor to be called into open court to discuss police misconduct allegations under oath. So if everybody's going to have their eyes on the Dirksen Federal Building on Tuesday.
Okay. Well, we'll try to get more details on that next time. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Heather, let's go ahead and start with you this week.
Well, I covered Mayor Rahm Emanuel before he left office back in 2018. So I reached out to him yesterday morning to ask about the subpoena. He is a famously combative politician with the press, with other politicians. And he sort of pushed back on me and he said, look, you're wrong about when this raid occurred. You're wrong about when this lawsuit was filed. I wasn't mayor, so this isn't my problem. Of course, I was right. The lawsuit was filed in 2018 and the raid occurred in August of 2018 when he was still mayor. So it was a little bit of a flashback to a bygone era of politics, but also a reminder that as he publicly weighs a presidential run in 2028, Rahm Emanuel has not mellowed out a bit.
No mellowness there whatsoever. All right, let's move on, Charlie.
And that does not surprise me at all about Rahm. If you recall the case here from Sangamon County that created national headlines, in which a white sheriff's deputy shot an unarmed black woman in the face after she had called to complain about prowlers. And his name is Sean Grayson. And in October, he was found guilty. A jury found him guilty of second-degree murder for shooting Sonia Massey in July of 2024. He was sentenced yesterday to 20 years in prison. And it is notable because his lawyer had asked the judge for a six-year sentence, pointing out how Grayson has diagnoses of advanced cancer. But the judge, Ryan Cadigan, Sangamon County Circuit Judge, did not give Grayson any leniency. He chose the maximum sentence allowable under state law for second-degree murder. Now, under Illinois sentencing laws, if Grayson behaves himself in prison, he'll have to serve 10 years on his sentence, minus the 561 days he's already spent in custody. So it may work out that he may be in prison for 8.5 years, more or less.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Chicago Tonight's Heather Sherrone. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.